You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Game 3, World Series tonight. Rays and Dodgers, even at 1. We'll have that for you right here. ESPN 102.5 The Game. That's presented by Gary Forrest Acura. First pitch just past 7 o'clock tonight. So if you're looking for the World Series, ESPN 102.5 The Game is your place. We'll see who will take a 2-1 lead in that big series, the last series of the Major League Baseball season. And once again, that's presented by Gary Force Acura. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Should have Taylor Zarzar here in just a moment, calling in, talking to us about this weekend's actions. We had silly underdog picks yesterday, so we made our selections. Going to be the biggest college football weekend to this point, right? Because the Big Ten,
they're back.
It's cranked
they're
up. In Illinois and Wisconsin are tonight at 7 o'clock on the Big Ten Network.
Got the Mountain West.
Mountain West is getting back cranked up again. So,
It's going to be great.
More college. And the SEC, ironically, has their lightest schedule to date this weekend.
Yep. Yeah, so that's going to be fun. We do have Taylor on with us.
We do have Taylor. Okay, well, let's go to Taylor.
Bring him on.
Taylor Zarzar is on the line with us. He's usually got a game of the week on SEC Network, and he's with ESPN. Taylor, how you doing?
I'm great. And because of what you just said, I'm going to put my feet up at home and watch those four games this weekend and get ready for Arkansas and A&M next Saturday night. So another bye week here in the Zarzar house.
Well, you've been at it every week, so – What do you do on a week, like you said, kick back, watch, but what are you looking for what you do in having a weekend off in the middle of the college football season, and then you're going to get cranked back up after this weekend? What are you looking for when you're flipping around this weekend?
Well, first, what I'm doing is trying to improve my short game. I want to go back to what you guys were saying at the start, and that is I'm going to be fascinated to see what the Big Ten looks like starting a season this late in late October. We've seen poor tackling all across college football, in large part because of limited contact, limited interaction, and positive COVID tests. Defenses have been struggling mightily all across college football, and we've seen a bunch of upsets, not only in the SEC, but across the country. And I'm just wondering, I'm actually expecting that's going to happen in the Big Ten, especially early in the season. So, you know, if an Indiana knocks off number 8 Penn State, or if number 21 Minnesota beats Harbaugh tomorrow night, I wouldn't be that surprised by it. I mean, I think I'd be pretty surprised if Nebraska beats Ohio State,
yeah,
who I think might be the best team in the country once they get to full strength. But everything else, it wouldn't surprise me if we get an upset this weekend in the Big Ten, and I think we're still going to see some of those types of upsets in the SEC, even though we're 4 or 5 weeks in.
Well, you're right about that, and I did ask. We had Paul Feinbaum on yesterday, and I literally asked him, so what's the Big Ten going to look like, and stated some of the things that you said. We've seen, you know, we remember that first game, Navy, this year, right? We're so used to Navy being responsible. I mean, they just get plowed by BYU in the game. It looked like who is that team? And we've just, like you said, the upsets and the tackling, the defense seems to be way behind. And so let's go back to, and I do agree with you, I think Ohio State on paper, they are clearly a playoff team. And let's just say they play out, right? They are loaded with talent. I think it's pretty clear to say Clemson is going to be there. If Ohio State plays out on paper and it plays out on Saturdays, they're there. It looks like Alabama's probably going to represent the SEC. Do you have any idea, as we sit here today, who in the heck the fourth team would be?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wonder if it's going to be a team that has a significant flaw or a significant blemish, I guess, like a Georgia this past weekend, if we're going to find the second best team in either the SEC or the Big Ten to round out that top four. I don't think the Big 12, I know Oklahoma State's still undefeated. I think they're just all but eliminated. I would be more inclined to look at a group of five team because of what we just referenced and because I think the playing field is more leveled because of the lack of practice time than it's ever been before. I would be more inclined to look at a BYU who looks sensational with a great quarterback or whoever wins the Cincinnati SMU game tomorrow night, if that team went undefeated, I'd be more inclined because of the level playing field, but I don't think they have a chance if they stay at four because they're not, neither one of those teams is playing any Power Five opponents due to the conference only schedule. So, you know, you're going to look at BYU's resume and you're going to say, oh, well, they beat Boise State or they beat Houston, but they're not going to have anything that comes anywhere close to a Power Five schedule. And that's completely unfair because they didn't have a chance to play those games. So I think that's the biggest question that we'll be asking if it continues to play out the way we expect. And if it does, then we're going to say, all right, well, Georgia lost by 17 to Alabama, but we think they have the fourth most talent in the country, so you're in. And that, you know, we're going to have plenty of debate about that if that happens.
No doubt about it. So Kentucky's had two really impressive wins back-to-back weeks. They held Mississippi State without an offensive touchdown, which is the first time a Mike Leach coach team has ever played a game and not had an offensive touchdown. They followed up by going to a place they hadn't won since 1984, and they beat Tennessee handily. And their defense is very opportunistic, as we know. So can they follow up? One, tell me what you think about this Kentucky team. And two, is it this is the tricky game, right? This is the minute you fall in love and you start talking about them and you get excited, then, you know, they could go to Missouri and easily lose this weekend. What do you think?
No question. In fact, I did this game 2 years ago, and they were dreadful in the first half, and Terry Wilson got benched because of how poorly he played in that game before they had this remarkable comeback that they won as time expired.
I still don't know how they pulled that off. That was one of the more miraculous finishes to win a game.
It really was. It was crazy, and Bowden had that punt return, and then Conrad catches that touchdown pass, time expired. Missouri didn't have a first down in the second half of that game, which is crazy. I don't think Kentucky's nearly as good defensively this year. They don't have a Josh Allen. They don't have the pass rush that they typically have. Their secondary has some questions. Even though they had a couple of pick sixes last week, I think Garantano telegraphed those passes. But I think that they could go lay an egg because Terry Wilson still is inconsistent in the passing game. And given the injuries they have in the backfield, they're not going to have as much depth running the football as they had at the beginning of the season. Having said that, I love their offensive line, and they really should be 4-0 right now. They blew the Ole Miss game. They turned it over left and right against Auburn. This is a team that we could be talking about right now going into next week's Georgia game as one of the teams that has a chance to get to Atlanta. Instead, they've shot themselves in the foot. And sure, they could do that again against Missouri tomorrow. Missouri's had rest now for a couple of weeks. Bazelak is clearly their quarterback after what he did against LSU. So I think kind of like Ole Miss moved the ball against Kentucky, I wouldn't be surprised if Mizzou has some similar success offensively. But I think like most games we're watching this year, which is kind of crazy to say in what we've grown up watching in the SEC, I think it's going to be a high-scoring game.
We're talking to Taylor Zarzur from ESPN. You can see him calling SEC games. And, Taylor, I just want to say I've really enjoyed your commentary. You've done an excellent job on your games. I know you've got a background here in Nashville, and I think people need to know that you're doing an excellent job out there.
Well, I really appreciate that. Long ago, your colleagues on this show, I would watch them do pregame Predator talk shows. So I learned a lot of lessons from those guys, and I miss being in Nashville. I really do. It's a great spot. And I think, you know, the team that has been most impacted in the entire Power Five by all of this is Vanderbilt. And I know that, you know, there weren't high expectations to begin with this season, and they were, I'm sure, be picked to be at the bottom of the conference. But just given all the COVID issues that they're going through right now, I mean, guys, when they do get back on the football field, I don't know how they're going to be competitive against anyone the rest of the season. It's just a mess right now.
It is going to be a challenge for sure. So, Taylor, I know you called Tennessee earlier in the year. You had their opener against South Carolina. Yep. As you can imagine, we've had all kinds of pretty emotional discussion based on what's happened the last couple of weeks to them. So give me your thought, just from where you sit, because we know that there's going to be a certain percentage of people that just rise and fall with the last game played. But in the big picture, where do you think they are right now?
I think they're an improved team that has better talent than they've had the last couple of years. Going into the season, I thought that they had a chance to win seven games, to be about a 7-3 team. 7-3 in a conference-only season, I mean, is, to me, about top 15 in the country. And they still have an opportunity to do that. I thought that they would win the Kentucky game instead of stubbing their toe the way that they did last week. The problem is Jarrett Garantano is just too inconsistent of a performer. He comes back from the dead a million times, comes off the bench and rallies the team left and right like he did last year, but he doesn't play. He just can't consistently play within himself. And because of that, he costs his team games. And we saw it last weekend. And so I think that we have to reevaluate the hopes of a 7-type win season and think that they're going to be more of a 5 or 6 win team. And if they had a non-conference schedule to go with that, then I think we would be looking at an 8-4, 9-4 type team this year, and we'd say, okay, we're seeing some more growth. They're clearly better at the line of scrimmage, offensively, I should say. They're much better at the line of scrimmage than they've been the last couple of years. But Jeremy Pruitt is obviously a no-nonsense guy that is going to do it his way. Tyson Helton, who was the offense coordinator there a couple of years ago, is now at Western Kentucky, said, I have never in my life seen a head coach every position group the way that this guy does. And the best example of that is what he did to Jimmy Brimbaugh during the game last Saturday. It's taken some time to go from a Butch Jones philosophy to a Jeremy Pruitt philosophy. I don't know two head coaches in the world that have less in common than those guys. And I think that these are just some big-time growing pains that the program is going through. But there are going to be some wild swings of emotion with Jeremy Pruitt's team. But I still think, given the way that he's recruiting, once he builds this team in his image, they're going to be one of the teams to beat in the SEC East. I think it's just taking probably a little bit longer than Tennessee fans would want, especially given what they've experienced in the last decade. So I know it's a long way of saying that it's kind of a mixed bag, but I do think once the season's over, you're going to see about a 6-4 type Tennessee team.
Talking to Taylor Zarzer of the SEC Network and ESPN, and I know you've seen both the teams that I'm going to bring up, and we knew when Lane Kiffin got the job at Ole Miss that he's an offensive mind. He was going to make that offense better. They have some talent. It's just how would he be able to use it? And so far, I feel like we've seen a pretty fun offense. They need some work on defense, but what have you seen through your eyes when you've called some of their games? Yeah. How long do you think the process will be for Lane to get Ole Miss back into a contention in the West?
So I called their only win in that crazy game against Kentucky that went to overtime. And I thought before the Arkansas game last week that Matt Corral was, if you wanted to name three quarterbacks that were playing the best in all of college football, I would put him on that list. I mean, he was so good in the first three games of the season against stiff competition. And then last week, 6 interceptions, almost all of which were telegraphed. You got a couple that are being picked off by a guy that has one arm that he can use. It was just head-scratching, some of the decision-making that we saw from Corral last week. Having said that, I still think that you're going to see a high-powered Ole Miss offense throughout the season that's going to be really fun to watch. The night before I called that game, Lane and I had this Zoom call, and I said, I know that this is the most basic question anybody could ask you, but I'm truly wondering, in your mind, what's the most important thing you want to accomplish this year at Ole Miss? And he said, I couldn't care less how many games we win. That doesn't matter. We have to build a program. It's going to take some time to do that. And this was right after the Florida game. He said if we would have lost that game 24-10 or 21-10 or something like that, no one would have remembered anything that Ole Miss did. They would have just said, one of the best teams in the country, Florida, beats Ole Miss, and they wouldn't have said a word about us. Instead, we lose by a couple of touchdowns, and we put up 600 total yards, and people say, holy cow, look how fun Lane Kiffin's offense is. And Lane said, it's been an unbelievable week of recruiting, almost like it felt when I was the offensive coordinator at Alabama with people beating down our door saying, I want to come be part of this. This is fun. So that's what I expect this year from Ole Miss. Even if they finish with a losing record at the end of the season, I think we're going to say, good grief, Lane Kiffin is going to do some damage. He's going to have this Oregon-type identity at Ole Miss, and he's going to make things really fun, and people are going to want to be part of that offense. It's going to take years, though, to build a defense. There's a lot of junior college talent in Ole Miss, in the state of Mississippi. I think he's going to have to go after a bunch of that this offseason if he wants to find any kind of way to get off the field in 2021. But I think that offense is going to be a whole lot of fun to watch.
I think how he answered that question is fascinating. And do you believe that he would have given you the same answer had you asked him that 10 years ago or more when he was at Tennessee or USC? Because I think going through what he did and going to Alabama might have helped him in that department.
There's no question it did. Yeah, and I think the confidence that he gained at Florida Atlantic by being a head coach again proved to him that this type of philosophy is going to work, and it made him more confident. You know the biggest question with Lane, and that is, can he behave and stay out of trouble Sunday through Friday?
Right.
And if he can do that, I know how much fun he has on Twitter. The guy really isn't like the center of attention when he's in a room. Like he's kind of a mild-mannered guy when you're just talking to him. He's not, braggadocious, and he doesn't light up the room. He does go crazy on Twitter, but if he can behave himself and stay out of controversy Sunday through Friday, this guy is truly one of the best play callers in all of football, and I think Ole Miss is going to benefit from that significantly. If things are a little bit boring, unless it's game day.
And then the other team I wanted to ask you about real quick, because I've brought this up with every SEC guest we've had this week, the Gus Bus, Auburn. It seems like every year there's something where is he going to make it? They don't look great right now. And Paul Feinbaum, your colleague, said, I mean, even though they're 2-2, really. They're 1-3 because of the Arkansas game. They won that game, but it was with controversy. So what do you think about Auburn and what's going on, and can they turn this around?
Yeah, I mean, having called that game, that given what happened at the end, and I think clearly you could hear in my voice the shock that I had when that snap happened. But you also look at the Kentucky game. They were outgained in every way in that game. It's just Kentucky turned it over three times. They absolutely could have lost that game. So I would say that Auburn's closer to 0-4 than they are to 2-2. I'm not excusing anything, but I would say this. Look, Derrick Brown, one of the best defensive tackles I've ever seen in the SEC. You lose Marlon Davidson. Big Cat Bryant isn't healthy, isn't been playing much. So their defensive line has lost a tremendous amount of talent. They've got injuries to their biggest leader on the team as their linebacker. They've got injuries in the secondary. They've had a rash of injuries at tailback and at receiver. That's a lot to overcome given the current set of circumstances. But having said that, I think that Chad Morris, the offensive coordinator, Gus Malzahn, the head coach, and Bo Nix, the quarterback, are really trying to force an offense on a team that can't run this type of philosophy. They do not have the speed and the athletic ability and the offensive line in front of them to run this high-powered, fast-paced offense. What happens is they lose a ton of yardage on first down, they get behind the chains, and then they're off the field in 10 seconds. And that there's just nothing more crippling to a defense that has had so much turnover than what they're trying to do offensively. I think they've got to dial it down and simplify their offense if they want to be more effective in these games. And you know, that's not Gus's calling card. He's a stubborn guy that wants to run, you know, this zone read, very fast-paced offense, and Chad Morris wants to put all of this eye candy out on the field. And so far this season, it is not working. So I'm fascinated by this game tomorrow at Ole Miss, because if Ole Miss and Corral gets right tomorrow and they win the game significantly, it's going to get toxic on the plains with Gus Malzahn. And he has this exorbitant buyout, and you just wonder what ultimately is going to happen with a fan base that is tired of all the ups and downs.
They'll never find a donor or donors to foot the $21 million bill. That just never happens in big programs. They'll just never, you know, they'll just have to eat it. They'll just have to sit with Gus till, you know, his contract plays out. Oh, wait a minute. We see that happen all the time. Hey, really appreciate, by the way, gambling is coming to Tennessee. And if you bet the over on the wins for Arkansas, you've already cashed in a ticket, because they are already way better than anybody thought they would be this season. So enjoy that game next week. Thanks for the visit.
Absolutely, guys. Always enjoy it. Thanks.
All right. That is Taylor Zarzar with SEC Network and ESPN, and we do appreciate him joining us. At the bottom of the hour, Samari Roll. We'll talk about the Titans and the Steelers, what that matchup. You heard Jeff Fisher on this show this week, him light up when you bring up Pittsburgh week. Does Samari Roll feel the same way? Does still feel that way, even though he's been out of the game for a bit? When you say Pittsburgh week, do you still get up for that? He's got experience both here and with the Ravens, dealing with Pittsburgh week twice a week. We'll come back. We'll talk to Samari Roll next on Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget, Titans fans, Corner Pub is your place to check out this Sunday. By the way, they have locations in Bellevue, Brentwood, and downtown. Great beer specials, including $1 off Yazoo and Happen Harry's draft beers, plus Happen Harry's bucket specials. Got a pregame show there from 9:30 until 11:30 this Sunday morning, leading up to kickoff for the Titans and the Steelers over at Nissan Stadium. Of course, that pregame show will feature Jared Stillman, the former GM, Floyd Reese, and forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. And that's brought to you by Wholesale Link, powered by Rumble On, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers. We bring in Samari Roll, a name people in this area remember oh so well. Samari, how you doing?
Well, first of all, we got to see if Samari is going to be on board with a lot of guests we've had who appreciate the song we just played, Mr. Telephone. I think he's the right age that he can remember.
Oh, yeah.
You appreciate the new edition, right?
I was singing it.
Oh, I was too.
Yeah, I was humming it in my head while I was listening to you.
It's been a while since I've heard New Edition. But, man, everybody, yeah, you got to love that song.
But you remember the summer. We had Jerry Stackhouse. We had Candace Story Lee. Like, we remember we had a streak, and they were calling
Mason.
Derek Mason. We were calling for the New Edition, and we just went on a roll with it.
Oh, yeah, Stackhouse does coach Vanderbilt. That's
yeah.
Right. I'm a big Carolina basketball fan, like always. Even though I'm a Seminole at heart, I'm a Carolina basketball fan. Stackhouse is one of my favorites.
How did that come about?
My father was a basketball coach, and he was a big Louisville and Denny Crum fan. And he liked Dean Smith also, but I liked the uniforms, and then when I found out Michael Jordan went to North Carolina, like, I was all in at that point. Probably, like, Kenny Smith, King Rice.
Oh, yeah.
You know, back, I've known them since way back then. Pete Chilcutt. Like, I'm a real
Yes.
Wow. You got a
great
love
name
that.
From the past. Pete Chilcutt, that is a great name from the past. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Pete Chilcutt, yeah.
Well, speaking of names from the past, we had your coach on back at the beginning of the week, Jeff Fisher, and towards the end of the interview, I bring up Pittsburgh week, and he lights up, Samari, like he's still coaching the Titans. Well, you have a unique perspective. You got Pittsburgh week here, and you had Pittsburgh week, you know, you had it twice, both places, and in Baltimore.
Yeah.
So do you still get the same vibes as, like, Jeff Fisher when you hear Pittsburgh week?
Yes, you do. You do. One thing, Pittsburgh is a team in the NFL that is going to come and play physical. Regardless how good the players are or whatever it may be, I think that just comes from the mentality of the city, a tough blue-collar town, and they play that way. They definitely play that way. And my first year playing for Coach Fisher, I remember he came in that Monday saying, boys, time to get oiled and lubed up and tell the wives and kids you might be bruised up. It's Pittsburgh week. And from that point on, I kind of understood what he meant.
Yeah, you definitely know what you're getting. They have decades of proof that they kind of look the same. The names may change, you know, on the roster, but they kind of have the same look year in and year out, decade in, you know, each decade. And certainly they're a franchise that's done a whole lot of winning. And here we are talking about the Titans and the Steelers both at 5-0. Something else that you had to deal with is trying to slow down their receivers. They're a franchise, for whatever reason, Samari, that has done a really good job of producing very productive wide receivers, and they're right back at it again this year.
You called that on the head. I don't know what they know about the receiver's position, but, I mean, no matter what round they draft the guy in, he is going to be a really good player. And the guy from Notre Dame, I remember seeing him at Notre Dame. He didn't look that way. You know, he looked like maybe a oversized receiver,
yep,
or maybe a flex tight end. Looks like a totally different person right now. And I think just the key for the Titans to win this game is, as long as they don't let the ball go over their head, letting Claypool make a play, or the kid, Deontay Johnson, and they keep everything in front of them, I think they'll be fine.
You know, that's interesting that you said that about Claypool. I remember, Samari, we would have on, you know, before the draft, we would have on these guys that study these players, and, you know, that rank them and try to predict where they're going to go. And I remember several right before the draft, because we thought the Titans would be in the market for a receiver. And so we were looking at guys like Chase Claypool and others that went late in the first round, and that big slew or that big run on receivers that went in the second round where he went. And I remember asking them about Chase Claypool, and they were not impressed. Like, we didn't get anybody, like, glowing about Claypool.
Right.
And they basically said exactly what you just said. So how was Pittsburgh able to kind of morph him into the guy we see today?
I remember when I got there, Yancey Figton was a big free agent signing we had coming from Pittsburgh. Hines Ward, Plexico, Charles Johnson, Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, Mike Wallace. Like, it just doesn't stop, man. And a lot of people have the misconception that the Steelers are just coming in to try and run the ball and pound it down your throat. But, no, it's total opposite. It's they try to establish the pass instead of the run. They've got a Hall of Fame quarterback, obviously, and I expect a good game Sunday.
We're talking to former Titans great Samari Roll, one of the best to play the position in Titans history. We all remember him well. So, Samari, when you look at defensive back play right now, we know how the game has evolved. They've taken some of the physicality out, especially over the middle. I think you could have fit in any type of game. But how much harder is it, do you think, for the corners to play right now with the way the rules are set?
I think the biggest issue, what I see with defensive backs now in NFL, is as soon as the ball is up, it's like these guys aren't trying to make a play on the ball. It's almost like, I'm not going to let this guy beat me deep, so let me get this pass interference call. And I don't know if that's just from them being concerned about being overly aggressive, but you can't play that way. Regardless of how the rules are, Stephon Gilmore went out there and won Defensive Player of the Year last year within the passing league with the way the rules are. It's just about studying and challenging these guys. You can't give Hall of Fame quarterbacks or great starting quarterbacks in NFL clear paths. They're too good to make those throws. You just got to challenge them, study film, and believe in yourself. But it is harder now. Definitely is harder on the DBs now.
Ben Roethlisberger has been around for a while. You had many battles against him. It does look like he has adjusted his game. When he first came to the league, he would hold on to that ball. It does look like he has evolved out of that some. But was he one of the more unique guys to try to defend because he could extend plays the way he did?
Yes, in Baltimore, he was very tough. He was younger than, so he held on to it as long as he could until they called him down. But he's gotten older, obviously, and smarter. So he gets rid of the ball now very quickly, and they've got those receivers now. But a guy like Claypool can catch a five-yard slant and take it 50, or Juju Smith-Schuster, still his third down guy. So, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, and when you're a Hall of Famer, you're still able to play. You're going to play at a high level, especially at the quarterback position.
We're talking to Titans great Samari Roll here on Darren Donick and Chase. And Samari, Willie asked you about kind of the evolution of the corner position, but I'll take it the other way. I mean, some of the receivers that you played with, you went up against, I mean, I guess it's still kind of the same of you have your speedy guys, you have your big bruising guys, but how have you seen that position evolve since you played?
The receivers are definitely bigger now. Like a guy like DK Metcalf, he's huge, man, fast. I think it will always, times will always change like that. You know, now they want the 6'1", 6'2", 200-pound corner, but that guy can't cover. So it's hard, man. I don't know how big Malcolm is for the Titans. I know Adoree Jackson is pretty small, so they're going to have their work cut out for them this week.
Now, I know that you both were defensive players, but you were in some games, whether it was here or Baltimore, against Mike Vrabel, now the Titans head coach. A lot of that same tenacity that he had on the field seems to be showing up on the sidelines. What are some things that you remember about playing against him and what you've seen now as he is a coach?
He'd always score touchdowns all the time. And you like asking yourself, if you know this dude is in, you know they're throwing him the ball. But, you know, he still catches touchdowns. He reminds me of Jeff, when Jeff was young, as far as knowing the rules and, you know, how to take the rules to your advantage, how to be young enough to still be hip enough to relate to your players and let your players be themselves, but not at the expense of the team. And, you know, just looking from afar, Vrabel always seemed like a pretty cool dude. And a lot of the players up there and media people up there say he's a great guy, and they play hard for him. So, obviously, Amy Adams did a great job picking his coach, and they've got a great team.
How much does it mean to you? And we've asked some of the former players this. I mean, there was a time after the early days of the Titans when you guys made your run to the Super Bowl and then it dropped off and it felt like the organization just didn't have a direction. Now it does. And so how much does it mean to you as somebody that laid the building blocks here in the early days in Nashville to see it going back now towards the top and fighting for division titles and Super Bowls?
They look very good. Like I was telling you earlier, they remind me of 99 and 2000, the way they play now. I came back a few years ago, and the coach, Malarkey, I think that he was there. It wasn't fun at all. It looked boring. Fans didn't seem interested. Older players didn't seem interested. Now Nashville is jumping again, and they got Vrabel and Amy Adams to thank for that. She reached out to a lot of us when we come to games. Now she shakes hands and talks. And, you know, back when I played, Bud Adams, he wasn't around that much, you know? Yeah. So I think with leadership and direction shows you what's possible.
Well, Samari, we appreciate you joining us today. It's good to catch up with you. And hope that all is well with you, and we'll hopefully see you down the road.
Yes, no doubt. I would have come to my annual Titans game this year, but, you know, the COVID happening, that's not happening.
Yeah, well, hopefully next year you can make the return, because I know it's always fun to see you guys. So we'll talk again soon.
Take care, Samari.
No doubt.
And we'll leave you with this. One more great North Carolina name from the past. One of my favorite college basketball names, Ranzino Smith, playing alongside of Kenny Smith. Remember him?
He barely played, though, right?
Yeah, I know. He wasn't really quite as good as Kenny.
Yeah. Okay, well, ask Stackhouse about Dante Calabria.
There you go. That's another one.
All right, thank you for having me.
He is the great Samari Roll.
Thank you.
Former Titans corner, former Ravens corner. Appreciate him taking the time to join us. Much more coming on Steelers Week. But first, it's my time to tell you about BetMGM. They are coming soon to our state. They are the same people that you see on the Las Vegas Strip, the MGM Grand. Yep, now they have a state-of-the-art gambling app that is coming soon to the state of Tennessee. You'll be able to bet on all of your sports. You can find out why BetMGM is the king of sportsbooks with parlay bonus payouts, in-game wagering, boosted odds specials, daily promotions, and much more. Every time you make a wager, you'll earn credits in M-Life Rewards. That is the exclusive loyalty program of MGM Resorts. So that's going to help you even after you place your bet. Every big game and every big play will mean more than ever, so get ready to experience sports like never before. You can be among the first fans in the state to download the BetMGM Sports app coming soon to Tennessee. BetMGM Sports will be offering sports betting from professional football, which we're in right now, college football, college basketball, and even tennis and boxing matches. Whether you like to place props, parlays, or take the over or under, like I do, BetMGM Sports will have a bet for everyone soon. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older. Must be present in Tennessee. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
There are 27 teams in pro football. And then there are the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Well, that's going to be the case Sunday at noon. It is the NFL game of the week. Steelers and Titans, two undefeateds, two 5-0 teams clashing here in Nashville. Appreciate Samari Roll for joining us. Good conversation with him, as always. You just made the list coming up at high noon. Also, we'll hear from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel as we inch a little bit closer to that game. That'll be at the bottom of the next hour. And then, of course, we'll have Lee Sterling from Paramount Sports to start the fourth and final hour, followed by Pick Six. We talked about maybe some concerns on the Titans side. How about we flip things over to the Pittsburgh side? And maybe you hinted at it with the whole Devin Bush thing, but what do you think they're talking about as concerns coming into this game?
I think that has to be their number one concern. And also, I think this is, like the Titans, it'll be by far the toughest opponent that Pittsburgh has faced. I was looking a little further into what we discussed in the first hour, and here are the wins. This is the Football Outsiders team efficiency rankings overall. Pittsburgh right now, very solid. Number three, the Titans are number eight, which, you know, for a 5-0 team is fairly low for that kind of record. For example, New Orleans at 3-2 actually has a higher efficiency rating. This is just how they do it. It's not, you know, it's just not based on opinion. It's just the way the numbers come out. But here's who the Steelers have beaten. The Giants, number 30. The Eagles, number 31. They have beaten Cleveland, who is, despite being 4-2, only number 25. Denver, number 24. And, surprisingly, Houston is number 15, despite the 1-5 record. And so you can work strength of schedule in there to tell you that Houston is maybe a little bit better than their record. So they have two common opponents in Houston and Denver. But I would say the Titans have had a slightly tougher strength of schedule. Not huge, but slightly better.
I would say along those lines, I mean, even though they have the best rushing defense, they haven't gone up against a back like Derrick Henry. And I would think that that has been a huge discussion of, okay, yeah, the and being
by the way,
Bush,
Cleveland didn't have Nick Chubb, so yeah, they didn't have to go up against him.
Yeah, I mean, so they have certainly, you know, they have not had the caliber of running back. And let's be honest, I mean, Derrick Henry right now, he's in a league of his own. And so they haven't had to go up against that. Now, do I think that the Titans are going to have to get creative and you're not going to see Derrick necessarily run at will like we saw last week? I still think he's going to be effective for the offense. And I think Pittsburgh, you know, all the good coaches know that you're not going to be able to completely shut a guy down. It's just how much can you contain him. So I'm sure that that's a huge conversation with them right now.
And do they go with the old school Steelers philosophy of, I am going to lose the game before I let you run? That's what they tried to do against Eddie George. And so sometimes Eddie George would have the 27 carries for 79 yards kind of game, right? But they would keep giving him the ball, and the Titans would, when they were winning on the good side of the rivalry, they'd be able to throw it enough. So at what cost do you try to set out to stop Derrick Henry? Because some teams have gotten burned. You can really put a lot of resources there, but you pay a price because it might open up the play-action passing game. Or I thought it was interesting. Remember the Patriots game in the playoffs last year where the Patriots really went the opposite? They said, we're going to take away the pass. We're just going to back up. Derrick Henry is going to get some yards, but we're not going to let him get any big plays, and we're not going to let them throw at all. That was the unconventional way, but I'm guessing the Steelers are going to go nose to nose and say, we've got a great run defense. We're not going to let Henry beat us. But that's where the Titans have to be good enough to make him pay through the air.
Well, if you remember last year when they played the Bucs, remember when Tampa came to town? Who was the number one team in the league against the run?
Tampa.
Bucs. Yeah.
Bucs. How did Derrick Henry fare that day?
Well, he had a couple of big runs. Remember, he had the fumble on the run that he did break, and he was going to go for even more, and then he coughed up the ball. But he did. They did hold him in check pretty well.
Right. That's what I'm getting at. So I do wonder, you know, can
still,
Pittsburgh...
He still has 75 yards, though.
Did he? Yeah, okay, that was more than... I thought he was around 60.
Yeah.
So
And how many points did they score? They ended up having a lot of... They scored a lot. So it's not like they shut the offense down.
Yeah, Titans won
27-23.
16 carries, 75 yards, no touchdowns, one catch for 8 yards. And then he did have the fumble.
And this was obviously with Tannehill. This was not Mariota.
Yes, this was week 8. This was Tannehill's second game as the starter. So they had come off that crazy game against the Chargers and then had Tampa the next week.
No, the Chargers was after Tampa.
No, it was the week before.
Was it?
Yep.
Yep.
The crazy Charger game here. Yep. So they had back-to-back. That's right, back-to-back home games.
They were at Denver. They made the change.
The change. And then Tannehill's first start was Chargers, and so that was his second start?
Yep.
16 carries, I think. Do we feel pretty comfortable Derrick Henry's going over 16 carries?
I do. I feel like that. And that's to the credit of the Titans that and Arthur Smith, that we have seen, even though they might be down in a game, they don't abandon the run. I mean, they still are feeding him the football because they know that, yeah, even though the book might tell you to throw because you're down on the scoreboard, they know how effective Henry can be. So, yeah, I would say that it'd be over 20, my guess.
Those stats are a little deceiving because if you remember the game, when you're like, he got 75 yards at the time, the number one rush defense in the league. Yeah, if you remember, he also got half of those yards in one play.
Right, right. So, you know, stats don't tell you the whole story.
Yeah, I mean, he basically had the one big run, and then he was fighting and scrapping for anything and everything after that, right? I mean, he didn't get a whole lot after that. Tampa did a really good job on him. So I do wonder, this is going to be the real test, right? Arthur Smith, if it's not working, are they patient enough to stick with it and stay with it the whole game, even if the run is not working?
Well, if you believe the number so far, there's only one game that he has had under 20 carries, and that was 19. And that was Buffalo.
Buffalo.
Yep.
Yep.
But
and remember, you have to be careful not to get, you know, too much where you get him too much workload. But I think the play action game is the key, right?
Yep.
It's one you can't force the running game. It's if they're cheating up, you got to make them pay with that play action game. And so that's where I'm wondering who do the Titans in their research and their game planning. Who do they think has the best matchup to exploit, especially through the play action? Is it one of the tight ends? Is it Firkser again? Could this be a Humphreys game where he gets the ball a little bit more? Because they're going to need that bread and butter. I fake it to Henry, I roll, or I get that quick slant or that quick play where I get, you know, you're not getting 15 or 20 yards, but you're moving the chains.
Well,
by the way, how is Jonnu Smith? How is remember he left the game last week. Is he back in there?
He's been limited.
Yeah. And if you get him, what percentage of Jonnu Smith are you getting?
But keep in mind, too, this is the first game since Denver. And you know, A.J. wasn't really much in Denver, but it's the first time that you'll have Davis and A.J. Brown in the lineup at the same time. It's been one or the
right.
other because of A.J.'s injury and then the COVID thing with Corey.
So who's got the best matchup that you can work, especially with Devin Bush out?
Yeah, well, they got Dupree and Watt.
Yeah.
those guys
they're pretty good.
Get after it.
Right, so you're not going to have much time, right? But that's why you're hoping to buy the extra second with the play action. So like we were saying, if you get into third and long against the Steelers, it just they're not – I don't like their chances at all. But if they can stay on time, run it enough – keep sucking in those linebackers and then work the play action the way they have, I think they can have production. Even if, regardless of whether Derrick Henry has 75 yards or 65 yards or 85 yards, and maybe he breaks a long one, who knows? But it's going to be tough to run, we know. But what does it open up if you have them use all the resources to stop him?
That's going to be the question because they have the weapons. For the first time in a long time, you can say that about a Titans offense, that if you stack the box to try and stop Henry, which that doesn't always work, you can open up things to the outside and you have a quarterback that's going to make those throws and receivers that are going to get it. So it's certainly, I think, Willie, the point that you have been hitting is spot on and we probably haven't said it enough. Yes, this is the biggest test for the Titans, but it's also the biggest test for the Steelers. I agree with that.
Are we surprised the Titans are a one-point favorite?
So I've been watching that line. The original game, they were a three-point dog. And then with this line, they've been a one-point favorite. I've seen them at 1.5 in some places too. So there's definitely been a little movement there. I am surprised. I actually thought that the Steelers might be a slight favorite or it could be closer to a pick.
Yeah. In Nashville? You're surprised? Like I do wonder, the 3.5 at the time, I'm guessing that was somewhat related to the fact that the Titans were going to, in theory, play that game without having practiced all week, right?
Right.
Or was it like that before? Was that line out before?
No, it's moved around because of the COVID circumstances too. But looking at it, right? So is it I'm just pulling it up, Darren. Is it one?
It was one last time I looked.
Like if there's two 5-0 teams and one of them's at home, you would think that's
one.
A little edge for the Titans.
The home thing is not factoring in right now. It's
not for the lines?
No.
Vegas lines are not 3 points
really.
For the home team?
No.
No?
No. Not during these times.
I
no.
mean, you're only going to have what?
Do we
10,
know that? I'm
10,000?
Just, guessing. It's 10, changed from what it's always been?
Yes. Oh, yes. How could you possibly view it the same? 10,000 people as opposed to 70? I mean, how could you possibly view that the same? It's not. Or none. They've had none or very little in stadiums. Did you see the game last night? You think Philadelphia had home field advantage? What was there, about 8,000 people there?
I still think surroundings. I still think travel. I still think there's advantage to being at home.
It's not.
I'm asking.
It's not 3 points.
Well, I don't know that. I'm just. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. Just to give you some more numbers, BetMGM does have the Titans at 1.5 minus okay. 1.5. Over-under is 50.5. And then on the money line, Pittsburgh's getting even money.
Yep. It's about right. I mean, it's basically a pick'em game.
Pretty much, yep.
Yep. All right, we'll come back. We'll start the third hour with You Just Made the List. Who or what has made you mad? That's next.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.